If you're hearing this, it means tickets are now on sale for our streaming Cybactacular.
That's what we're calling the streaming show of our Star Trek V review that we toured last year. We filmed our Hollywood show, and it's going to be streaming on Thursday, May 16th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And the stream will be available for a couple of weeks after that. If you can't watch right at the premiere time. A couple of pieces of information about this. If you support us at MaximumFun.org/join and your membership is current, check your email inbox because Maximum Fun will have emailed you a promo code to get $5 off your ticket. And also, we have some VIP packages available that include a meet and greet with me and Adam. Those are going fast, so jump on that if you want a meet and greet VIP package. Again, it's greatestgentour.com to get your tickets for the streaming Cybactacular.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet. Engage. Captain Jean-Luc Picard of the USS Enterprise.
Commander Benjamin Sisko, Federation Starbase, Deep Space Nine.
Welcome to the Greatest Generation Deep Space Nine. It's a Star Trek podcast by a couple of guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. I'm Ben Harrison.
I'm Adam Pranica.
How you doing today, Adam?
It's 4:20 today, Ben. So,
Yeah.
So that's how I'm doing.
Hmm. Are you blazing, brother?
Well, I'm doing a lot of things today.
Cracking brew dogs?
Gotta do it.
Is that spotted cow or whatever?
It is. I'm cracking open a spotted cow. I'm pouring it into my Maximum Fun Rocket logo frosty mug.
Wow. How do you wind up with all these spotted cows? Because we got some on a tour stop at one point. I've never gotten to try it. It all went home with you? Is that what happened?
That's exactly what happened. It all went home with me. And then occasionally, I will have a friend or a family member send me a half rack.
Wow.
And that's how I have a rolling, very low supply of it as the months go on. Like, I always seem to have around six.
That's great. It's so cool that you've never shared any of that with me, even though some of it was technically for me.
I know. Yeah. I've hoarded it. The hoarding isn't good. You hate to see it.
It stresses the supply chain. That's the problem with it.
I know. And if I ever see you again in person, I'll bring some over. How's that?
Okay. That or I kick your butt.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is more likely?
You giving me free beer?
Think so.
Man, a 420 episode. Who'd have thunk it? My father's birthday is 420.
That's great.
That's what we're celebrating, right?
Yeah, that's what I'm celebrating. Happy birthday, Ben's dad.
I'm just having myself a little Friday afternoon rum beverage.
Yeah, I'm looking at you during. We're continuing to do the Skype thing.
Yeah.
What do you got in that glass?
This may be a mistake. This is a mango passion fruit daiquiri, I guess, would be the best description.
Is that one of those bakeries that, mm-hmm. that you mentioned before, made in a Ziploc bag?
Ziploc bag in the freezer overnight. Everything but the mango. I blended it with some frozen mango when it came out.
You've told me about that cocktail a bunch, and yet the many occasions that I've recorded at your home have never offered me one, so that's cool, too.
Well, you know, I...
Evidently, we're both good at hoarding.
It takes a lot of forethought to make this drink because you have to make it the night before. And, you know, when I'm thinking about you coming over to the house, I'm more thinking about how I protect my valuables than how I provide you things to drink.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm always walking off with something.
Yeah, we always count the silverware when you leave.
Yeah. And I have a growing collection of butter knives.
When you cracked that can... Right after saying the thing about 420, I thought for sure you were going to be cracking a can of some kind of marijuana soda.
Boy, that sounds great, by the way, but also terrifying. I've never had a good experience with a soda weed.
Really?
Yeah.
What about those ones I was making at that party that one time?
Those were soda weed?
Yeah.
Oh, no. Oh, I remember those. Yeah, but that was made by... it feels like that was a different thing. Like the dosage was far less for the beer company weed drink that we had on that trip.
Yeah, I was making I was making like a Radler with it so that it wouldn't be as much as high of a dosage.
I mean, you get a guy like John Gabris drinking a soda weed beverage with like 400 milligrams of THC in it. I don't know how he does it. That seems like it would be lethal.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't imagine that. On a recent bonus episode of Friendly Fire.
The hit podcast?
Yeah, the hit podcast, Friendly Fire. A recent bonus episode, I idly dosed myself. I wouldn't say it was totally an accident, but I had some THC candies on my desk, and I had one mid-podcast, which I was guessing I was not going to feel the effects of until well after the end of the podcast. Uh-huh. But maybe it was just the adrenaline kicking my system into high gear, but I was...
You got a little paranoid?
Really feeling it by the end.
Really?
Not paranoid, just like wow, I'm not myself right now.
You know, a lesser friend would say something like, I couldn't tell the difference and turn that into an insult. But I'm saying that, and by saying that, I'm complimenting you. Like, I could not tell the difference, and I think it's because you just shook it off so ably.
I hold it together. I know how to maintain.
I don't do that. I fall apart.
Yeah. I will say that I, given the stresses that everyone is going through, have been like self-medicating maybe a bit more than I'm proud of lately.
Yeah?
Yeah.
That's something that I've yet to do or really lean into. I think part of it is the scarcity of materials. Ben, where do I get the materials if I run out?
God damn it.
But also, I want to keep my wit. I feel a strange sense of paranoia that, like, I want to be ready for something unforeseen.
If this does turn out to be a fast zombie scenario, you want to be able to run?
That's what I'm saying. It's an ugly thought, but I'm haunted by ugly thoughts these days.
Yeah.
I don't want to be. Maybe that means I should be getting into the jazz gums a little more liberally. And you know what we should do, we should commit to do, is playing a little more jazz horse for our health.
Tell me you love jazz.
Horse, earth horse.
Okay, boys, saddle up. You're as handy with a shooting iron as you are with a woman's heart.
I'm beginning to see the appeal of this program.
I suggest you find a new line of work.
It's okay, girl. Just a scratch.
For our health, that's how we should be self-medicating. Chilling out with some jazz horse.
Let's make a jazz horse date for either tonight or this weekend. Let's do that.
That sounds so nice. The last time we did that was like 6 months ago.
I know.
And it was very badly stymied by the fact that I thought that I could just use my... my iPhone headphones to talk to you guys through my controller.
Yeah.
And they did not work. So
a lot of feedback.
I went and bought a fancy set of video game headphones, which is like the most extravagant, useless thing I've ever bought, because we never did another jazz horse hang.
We VR headsetted ourselves again. We did that thing where we thought we had a good idea that took a little money. We tried it a couple of times and it failed, and then we never used it again. Look, we're going to dust off the headphones, Ben, and we're going to make it right, and it's going to be for our health.
Maybe we should dust off the VR sets too.
Yeah? Can you do jazz horse over VR?
I think we should do that Star Trek game over VR.
All right.
And broadcast it.
You know what?
For the world to see.
That doesn't sound very therapeutic to me.
We should try it again.
All right.
That's what I'm saying.
All right. All right, fine. Yeah, everyone's doing Twitch streams these days.
Yeah, Twitch is going crazy right now.
Why not us, Twitch?
Podcasting is down industry-wide and Twitch is up.
Yeah, it's time to buy high on Twitch.
Yeah, we got to get out of this sinking ship.
Yeah, this has been a terrible mistake. On paper, will today's episode be a terrible mistake? I don't know if I were to pitch you the idea to this story, if you would want to buy it, Ben. But talk over what actually happened. The episode we actually get is Deep Space Nine Season 6, Episode 10, The Magnificent Ferengi.
Do you realize how incredible this is? No, of course you don't.
Looks like Leeta is picking up bartending shifts at Quark's now. That's got to be a big upgrade from just working the Dabo tables, right?
Yeah, I've got to believe that. I think, you know, you spend any time in a bar versus at a table playing a casino game, I think you know which tips are bigger.
Dabo girls aren't croupiers, are they? They're not like running the games. Or are they?
I feel like both in the last episode, we got a glimpse of the Dabo table, and a little bit in this episode, it doesn't look like we get Dabo girls anymore. What happened?
Maybe Quark stopped being such a misogynistic asshole.
Hey, good for him.
Yeah.
He's getting better. He put Leeta behind the bar. That's good. That's got to be a promotion, right?
It's got to be.
You don't see her pouring drinks, though. I wonder how her drinks are.
Hmm. She seems to be a dedicated person. Like, I bet she would take it really seriously and do a good job.
Yeah. I miss going to bars.
Some great news in this scene, Adam. Squill is back on the menu, boys.
Yeah. I mean, speaking of missing things, everyone has been eating unadorned pancakes months and months. Just dry-ass pancakes.
Every supermarket you go into, you go down to the Sauce of Squill aisle, and it's just empty shelves.
A limit of two only when they even have the stock.
Yeah. It sucks. You try and order it on Amazon, they're back-ordered. No Sauce of Squill anywhere.
No.
This turns out to have been some scheme by the consortium on the planet that grows squill.
You're saying there was a squill squeam?
Yeah, they had a squill squeam. They were trying to squapress the squapply of squill.
Squill squeam was my least favorite character in Transformers.
Okay, let's just quit this stupid podcast now. I'm like almost done with this fucking giant drink I made for myself.
I'm crossfading and firing on all cylinders.
Wow.
And unlike you on the hit podcast Friendly Fire, people can tell.
Quark has secured a couple of crates of squill, Sauce of Squill, because he had some... He's trying to tell some story about this.
I once did business with the nephew of the cousin of the stepsister of a friend of the secretary to the consortium's chief accountant.
But nobody really cares about this story, right?
I mean, it's sad because Quark is sincerely feeling great about this story. This isn't, like, I feel like you can tell when someone has like gathered the people around in order to tell a story that makes them look great. There's the darkness that is about ego inflation.
Yeah.
But I feel like Quark is just really excited about holding court and telling a story that he thinks is good. I don't think this is about making himself look heroic, even though the dialogue that everyone else has serves that idea.
Yeah.
But he really seems hurt when people turn away and see the Starfleets walk in.
Like the meanest prank we could possibly pull on Roderick would be at like a Max FunCon type of thing where he is given to planting himself somewhere and holding forth like this, like just arrange with 20 people to go gather around and start listening to some story he starts to tell and then just everyone walk away immediately.
That would be really hurtful. Why would you want to do that to him?
I'm saying that would be a mean prank. That's the premise of the thing I just said.
You're just coming up with pranks against third host of Friendly Fire, the hit war movie podcast, John Roderick?
That guy could come down a peg or two, in my opinion.
Couple of pegs, if you ask me.
Couple of pegs, yeah.
It's a prank! Oh, no! Ben pranked me.
Dex, Bashir, and O'Brien walk into the bar. They've just come off of some secret mission behind enemy lines in Cardassian space.
Dax has got a couple of those batteries held up to her chest, so you know.
Yeah.
You know it was successful.
Bashir and O'Brien, each have one down by their dick.
Yeah.
It's gone great for them. They, you know, you don't just throw something like that away.
Conquering heroes. That's the vibe.
Yeah. So they come in and people are much more interested in what went on with them. So they draw all of the fun away from Quark, who Roderick like is crestfallen.
Quark for the moment can't understand why people are so interested in the Starfleet's story of their adventures instead of his own. And Odo is there to explain that heroism can mean different things to different people.
It's true.
Not everyone keeps their heroism in the same place.
Yeah, Quark keeps it in his knees, for example.
Uh-huh. But he gets a call blown into him by the Negus, and we elliptically cut to a scene where Quark has found Rom doing Rom work.
Yeah.
Inside on some conduit somewhere.
Rom found like the honey stick mother load in this conduit.
I love gold.
Yeah.
There are a lot of them in there. I would have loved to just like end the scene with Quark like reaching out and just like pocketing one of those.
Yoink! It seems like if you're making Jeffrey's tubes in a workplace full of honey sticks, you wouldn't want to waffleize them in a way that like many of the paneling is made. It's going to be impossible to clean up.
Yeah, if you drop one, it's just going to go down into the cracks.
That's bad news. Yeah. You got to replace the whole plate.
Yeah, it's a fucking mess.
You got to replace the waffle. It, in its entirety.
You definitely don't want to spill sauce of squill on that kind of plating.
Sure don't. The sauce of squill, like you want the dark stuff, right? You want that grade
B sauce of squill. Is a lot of people think it's worse sauce of squill, but it's actually more flavorful.
The letters actually mean the opposite of what you would think.
Yeah. Grade A's just sweeter. Grade B, a little bit richer flavor.
You know, my wife and I recently ran out of our preferred pancake mix that you can only get in Seattle. it's great. It's like it's very popular to Seattleites, and we ended up mail ordering it, and you can only get it in quantities of like 4 boxes. So we ordered basically $45 of pancake mix in these 4 giant boxes that we have in our pantry now, but it was the only way to get it.
Wow. That is a profound self-own.
It really is.
The idea of spending $45 on a mixture of flour and baking soda.
I knew that would be the angle that you took with it, but we were feeling homesick, and that stuff has unique properties. You can't just make it.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure you can't.
There's something secret in there.
It's impossible to reproduce the pancakes that only this mix can make.
You know what, man? One of these days, in a year or two, when we're allowed to see each other, I'll make you these pancakes and I'll make you a believer.
Mm.
What, you don't like pancakes? I bet you don't.
I like pancakes.
Man of unpopular food opinions.
I made some pancakes last weekend.
Yeah. Did you put squill on them?
No, I put the grade B maple syrup on them.
Gotta do that.
They were good.
The B's the good stuff.
Yeah. I was a little bummed because I was out of frozen blueberries, and I like to put some frozen blueberries in the pancake.
I like that a lot, but you don't put it in the mix. Ben, you put it in the cake in the pan.
Yeah, you drop them onto the cake in the pan.
That's what you do.
So they don't blew up your pancake.
Yeah. No one wants to blew their pancakes before they're ready.
Gold-a-cut.
Gold-a-cut.
So
the deal here is the Negus has blown this call into Quark because Quark's mommy has been abducted by the Dominion. Quark is in charge of getting her back. Apparently the Ferengi have no military now for reasons.
I mean, this is the moment. You must suspend your disbelief, right? Because the Negus is the head of state, like the president of Ferenginar,
right,
is telling a bartender that he must go rescue his lady friend.
Yeah. She got abducted by them at some point when she went to Vulcan to have some plastic surgery done, which I thought was pretty surprising. The idea that the best plastic surgeons in the quadrant would be on Vulcan.
Oh, that is interesting. Vulcan's not known for their vanity.
I mean, they're not, but they are all really like tight, you know?
Oh yeah, they're super fuckable.
Yeah. So maybe that's like the one vice that Vulcans have, is that they're very like appearance oriented.
Just want to grab those bangs and take a face ride. Just get a very precise blowjob.
Yeah. You just want to fuck Sarek so bad.
Why don't you suck this that is my dick? Fucking Sarek. Eat it.
You fucking terry cloth Batman motherfucker.
You know what aspect of the story is never brought up? I mean, among the hundreds, let's be honest, is that the price that the Negus puts on Moogie's head is only 50 bars.
Yeah.
Like, she should be insulted by this, right?
I just never know what any of this is worth to anyone.
Yeah.
You know?
I think anyone would be insulted by any number.
Right. Yeah, that's the issue, is like, what you want if you're Moogie is for a fleet of those horseshoe ships from TNG right. to raid Dominion space and yeah. get you back.
Yeah, but instead it is the B squad led by Quark.
It's like the C squad.
Quark tries to recruit Rom for this mission, and Rom's like, I got a job. And it's right here, tending to these honey sticks
yeah.
and this honeycomb.
He has to break a lot of news to Rom here.
Rom, brace yourself. I have bad news.
Because yeah. Rom didn't know that Moogie and Negus Sek were in love.
No.
That it's been going on for years.
No.
He didn't know that his mom was secretly running the Ferengi Alliance.
No.
All of this is coming as news to him. The fact that she's been abducted, news most of all. They get distracted enough by this conversation that as they are crawling through the Jeffries tubes, they open the wrong door and stick their heads out into Sisko's office.
May I help you, gentlemen?
I love this scene.
That was great.
It's very Little Rascals-y.
Yeah. I am a total sucker for any time a character looks through a window or two or more characters stick their heads out from beyond a corner in anything.
Yeah. That's tons of fun.
When Larry and J.B. Smoove do it in the Coffee Beans episode of this most recent season of Curb Your Enthusiasm, I had to pause the episode. I laughed so hard.
I really appreciate this season of Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Yeah, it was fucking great.
Ben, I want to go back and pick up something before we move too far away. When Quark bullet points all of this information for Rom, did you notice that his nose are in the first three notes of Also Sprach Zarathustra?
No.
So they got to do this. Rom is in 1,000%. They got to put a team together.
But he's in it for the money. Like, that's, I think, is crucial, right? He's not doing it because it's Moogie. It's the Latinum.
Yeah. He's going to get half share of the 50 bars minus Quark's finder's fee. And then they're going to recruit the rest of the team based on the idea that the total fee is 20 bars minus Quark's finder's fee. So the first member that they recruit is Ensign Nog.
Another person with a job.
Yeah. And with like an attachment to a military that is currently attempting to de-escalate hostilities with the Dominion. So... surprising that he's able to get leave to go do this, given that, right?
This is like the God, it's such fucking minutiae to even say this, but I wish I knew how leave worked for Starfleet officers.
Yeah, it is minutiae, Adam, but it's also kind of the premise of our podcast.
Yeah. Yeah.
I wish I knew too.
It's still like the latinum is the tempting element of this thing.
Right.
It's not whether or not he has time off.
Right.
It's both the latinum and the power. Because the thing that really gets him hooked is that he'd be the mission equivalent of Worf for the mission.
You could be the team's drill instructor.
Right.
And that is so tasty.
Yeah, this
He's
is
got it.
It's this is sort of the opposite, right? It's first you get the power, then you get the latinum.
But their crew isn't complete. They can't do this with three people. We need to, in this episode, Ben, call back every Ferengi we've ever met on Deep Space Nine.
Yeah. And at least one that we haven't met, right? Because we don't know Lek, do we?
Oh, yeah, we do.
Do we?
We totally know Lek.
When did we meet Lek?
Lek was in the episode Ferengi Love Songs.
Doing what?
That was the episode where Quark discovered that Moogie and Zek were in love with each other.
And what did Lek do in it?
Lek worked with Zek.
Lek worked with Zek.
He was his adjutant.
Uh-huh. Well, Lek is a... Is the knife expert for this team.
Guns for show, knives for a pro.
Not your typical Ferengi, much more motivated by his bloodlust than by remuneration. He says out loud he does not care about latinum, and that fucking shatters these guys' brains when they hear that.
Yeah, I mean, he should be thrown in jail for even saying that, right?
Right. That should be against the law. But he is tempted into participating because he will get to test his skills in combat against Jem'Hadar, and that is very exciting to him.
These skills we come to discover are laughable. So I don't know why he's so excited.
Yeah. I mean, would it have worked, though, if they weren't laughable? Like, if this guy was, like, a totally... devastating badass, would you have believed him as a Ferengi?
I don't know. I mean, I think it might have been interesting if one of them was just really, really good at this instead of them all being terrible.
Yeah.
But I guess it's that title is given to Quark, right? Because he's the one that later on is so frustrated by everyone's inability to do anything strategic.
Right. I thought a lot in this episode about how dangerous the Ferengi were in TNG. Like, they were goofy and embarrassing, but they were also getting over on the Enterprise crew pretty routinely. These Ferengi don't feel that capable, you know?
I was thinking about what changed, and the absence of the phaser lasso is what changed. Ben, you got to bring that thing back.
The fur and the phaser lasso go away and they just turn into jokes.
What happened to the fur?
I don't know.
Bring it back.
Bring back the fur.
Maybe it's like the ROMs in Star Trek Picard. You get your Highland Ferengi and your Lowland Ferengi.
Oh.
You know, the Highland types are the fur and lasso type.
Yeah. Because the wet, muddy Ferenginar of Deep Space Nine is not a place that where fur would be that adaptive.
Yeah, it'd be a disaster.
Yeah. It'd be real messy. You'd be getting mud in your fur all the time.
It'd be stinky too. You know that.
Yeah. They go bust cousin Gayla out of jail at Starbase 3, blah, blah, blah.
You know Gayla from the Lord of War episode of Deep Space Nine.
Yeah. And you know Starbase 3, blah, 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 from establishing shots of earlier this season episodes of Deep Space Nine.
Yeah. We're making all the callbacks.
Yeah. They get everybody together in Quark's bar. They're having a meeting chaired by Nog, who is talking them through schematics. He's got them looking over a schematic of a Jem'Hadar holding facility. So they're talking about a guns hot rescue raid in this scene.
You can tell that Nog is a little bit drunk with like the equivalent of new rich. He's like new power.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. He's drunk on it and using it in more extravagant ways than somebody who's used to having it.
Don't be ridiculous.
You mean, don't be ridiculous, sir!
And a holding facility is a place that we've seen, right? That's the gladiator camp that Worf and Martok were kept in, right?
Yeah, they better hope that none of them get thrown into that circle, because none of them could hold their own against a Martok type.
No, I mean, that'd be easy pickings.
But the team is not complete yet, Adam.
No, it sure isn't. Enter Brunt.
Ex-Liquidator Brunt. Apparently, he has his employment with the Ferengi Commerce Authorities has been severed. He's got a bit of an axe to grind, but also wants to participate in this little raid in order to get back in the good graces of the Grand Nagus, which would be great for him. But Quark says, like, yeah, fuck off. We don't actually need you. But Brunt's got a ship, which is one element of this scheme that they hadn't quite figured out.
Jeffrey Combs is in more episodes of this show than many actors who have their name in the title credits.
Yeah, he's definitely been in more episodes than, for some reason, Jake this season.
Why? What does it take to make the credits on this show?
I don't know.
I wonder if one of the rules of that is you need to be one character in order to do it.
Maybe.
Like, is the multiplicity of characters the factor that keeps him out of the credits?
That makes sense to me. I don't know. I mean, who knows the vagaries of Hollywood contracting?
Star Trek credits always include the character name, and I wonder if that's... I wonder if it's just too much work to change the credits every time for Jeffrey Combs, because it would always be a different character.
Yeah, it would cost a fortune. I mean,
like, you'd give him character cloud to cover them all.
Yeah. Jeffrey Combs is, I don't know, one of three or four different guys, maybe.
They'd have to roll his characters like credits. Like end credits.
To be quite honest about it, I was in a pail.
Mr. Bucket,
I have to revert back to my instinct. I don't use the bucket anymore.
They start practicing for this. They have like a hollow suite practice facility. It's Star Trek caves. They're trying to shoot the Jem'Hadar and not Moogie. But they're finding that the Jem'Hadar in these, even in the holo training, are way more than they can handle. And these do not seem like the most tactically adept Jem'Hadar. Like, they're not crouching behind cover and firing. They're just like standing there in the middle of the room shooting everybody.
It's pretty fun to see this crew get murdered.
Yeah.
The way they are. That's neat.
I liked it. I liked Lek shooting Moogie. I liked that Moogie got to do a going down by phaser fire scene.
If you're an actor and your role is Moogie, I think you've got to relish this moment.
Yeah.
Like you know you're not going to get killed like this on the show ordinarily.
Yeah.
You're leaning into it.
Yeah.
This is the eighth time they've done this, and they seem to be getting worse.
That's take 62. We ought to just bag it.
Nog is not doing a great job doing the tactical leadership stuff, and he's starting to get frustrated.
I think we're getting better.
No, you're not.
But more frustrated than anybody is Quark.
Get out of here, all of you.
Who feels like they are just wasting their time trying to make a crack infiltration squad out of a bunch of ridiculously overdressed businessmen.
Yeah, he might be the most overdressed, right?
Yeah.
He's wearing the jacket of a flamboyant televangelist in this episode.
Yeah, it's like a tailcoat, but made out of like Greyhound bus upholstery material.
It doesn't appear to allow the kind of range of motion that you want on a mission like this.
Yeah, like there are men's jackets that are made for holding a rifle, but they have
gussets,
yeah,
right?
They have extra material sewn in around the arms and in the back so that when you raise the rifle, it's got some expansion. He doesn't
Where
have
do you
that.
Get the gussets, Ben? The gussets.
All right. Everything is not the time I wanted to make action figures when I was 9, Adam.
This is the moment where Quark needs to decide to kill his team or get off the pot. He's fairly devastated by his chances.
I like Rom's little pep talk here, because Rom is like, why are you trying to be a Nausicaan, man? Like, this isn't you. What you are is a businessman. Why don't we do this as a negotiation? That's what you're good at.
It should have been his first thought. But it's not, because it would have prevented all of the fun scenes of them training together.
That would have killed like 20 minutes of episode time if it hadn't been, if it had been his first thought. So,
yeah. Everyone in the writer's room is like stretching the taffy.
So they have a little meeting with Sisko and Kira, and we come in media res with Quark thanking them for what they've done for him. And they say, like, this is good for us as well, so don't even sweat it. And we don't even know what this is about in this scene.
I love that Kira, who also, by the way, fucking hates Quark, is like, yeah, you did me a solid getting me out of jail, so here's your owed one.
Yeah. She says, don't turn your back on him. He's not to be trusted, about whoever they are talking about. My mind went in a lot of directions here.
Yeah.
Because I think the last person we saw in a holding cell was Dukat, right?
I also guessed that it was going to be Dukat.
I had not paid much attention to the opening credit sequence. So I said, wow, Mark Alamo, is he going to be in this?
Yeah. Yeah, very surprised to see Keevan on Brunt's ship.
We need to talk about Keevan is back.
It's true. The only reason Brunt's even involved in this mission is this ship. It's like when you're in high school and you have a friend that has a car and you really don't like this friend for any other reason than that he has a car.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's that was me in high school, Adam. So thank you.
You were the person with the car. Why am I suddenly so popular?
Why are these kids hanging out with me? No. I didn't even have a car. I had my dad's car.
Mm.
Sometimes.
So Keevan walks on board to the shock of everyone. What you want to do when Keevan arrives is introduce Keevan to everyone else who's there. And Rom does a good job of that.
Hi, I'm Rom.
Yeah, Keevan kind of dumps ice in all of their laps, though, because he's like, hey, it's going to be nice dying with all of you guys. And they're like, what do you mean? And he's like, well, the second we leave this station, we're all fucking dead meat. Like, the Dominion is not a negotiate with Ferengis type of organization. And they're definitely going to torture and kill me when they have me. But they're probably going to kill you guys just to get me. Like, they did not come here to party the way you think they did.
I mean, Keevan really prescribes to the way of absolute candor here in a fun way.
Yeah.
You got old, Admiral Picard.
Yeah, he's kind of a co-op Malat boy.
Yeah, really is.
So they head out, and where they're going to be doing this deal is Empok Nor.
That's right. The Tilty Space Nine of the Quadrant.
It's always tilted. That's how you know it's Empok Nor.
Yeah.
They come in, they scan for life forms. There are no life forms. And they go set up in the six bay of Empok Nor, because it's pretty close to where they've docked their ship. And you can kind of control access to the six bay. So it's a defensible position on Empok Nor.
Empok Nor is really the Cardassian Kangol hat tilted on Samuel L. Jackson's head.
Yeah.
Of Cardassian space stations.
It's like if you combined a Sam Jackson Kangol hat with an auto junkyard where you can go like pick and pull spare parts.
Yeah. That's exactly it.
So
yeah. Perfect comparison.
Yeah. So they're trying to get this room set up.
I like it. They eyeball the entrances and exits. They take inventory of the gear they have around them. Much of it is medical.
Yeah.
They set up that alarm system that tells them if a ship is entering.
Yeah.
And approaching.
They set up the thing to prevent unwanted transports so that the Dominion can't just grab Keevan and leave without even boarding the station.
Nog is just as rigid in his leadership qualities as ever, though. He is really pointing fingers and delegating tasks.
Yeah, he's really drill sergeanting them.
Yeah.
Telling them that he'll unscrew their head and shit down their neck. That he will peel their face off with his teeth, etc., etc.
If you have some thoughts on my situation, you address me as your superior and not like one of your ass pals.
As much of a downer as he is, in his attitudes, it's Kevan that is the real downer of the group.
Yeah.
Anytime he begins to speak, he's telling them that they're all going to die.
Kevan doesn't seem that upset about this, right? Like it's kind of an interesting character choice that he's the guy that was honor bound to take his own life when he was captured by the Federation, but
yeah,
and didn't like, and he chose not to, but then he's also like, as far as we can tell, not shitting himself at all about the fact that he's about to die at the hands of the Dominion when he is given back to them.
Like, he had the chance to Jeffrey Epstein himself a number of times. Jeffrey Epstein, who famously killed himself in prison. And that is exactly what he did. There was no like foul play at all involved in that.
Nothing weird happened there at all.
Yeah.
They've got some time to kill before the Jem'Hadar show up. So they set him up with, I think it's Gala that's going to be watching him for the first shift, and they all go to sleep and then wake up and Gala has lost track of Kevan.
Gala fell asleep on watch.
Yeah. Gala sucks.
Can't do that. Yeah.
He's an arms dealer, not a soldier.
I think anyone would have fallen asleep on watch, though. This is sort of a motley crew.
Yeah. Yeah. None of these people are like super sharp. Alamarin, come to fort. Alamarin, come to fort. What are you doing? What are you doing? Mind what you're doing now. Exactly. They manage to get back to the craft before Kevan takes off, and they'd like disconnected the starter or whatever so that it would be a little bit harder for him to leave. But
I really like how much running is in this sequence.
Yeah.
You really get a sense of the scale of the station when you get this sequence where you see every setting of the characters running through.
I wondered if they sped this footage up like 5% or something, because it looked almost a little bit Charlie Chaplin.
Yeah. Yeah, I got a little bit of that feeling.
It was fun, though. Yeah, I agree. Like, they run and get him and then have to run back because they, you know, the proximity alarm goes off and the Dominion ship is arriving. Yeah. And then they like rush back to the six bay. They're like catching their breath. The alarm gets shut off from the outside, and Nog is made to go like crack the door open a bit to see if anyone is outside the six bay. And when he cracks the door, he sees that they've brought all the Jem'Hadar at him.
It's so crazy when he looks out and every available spot on the rail is taken by a gun-wielding Jem'Hadar guy.
Yeah.
Like, they are elbow to elbow up there.
I thought that was great. Like, I feel like a huge percentage of the budget of this episode was just on the extras that they put in Jem'Hadar makeup, because that can't be cheap, right? Like, getting like 25 guys in that makeup.
The promise of the Jem'Hadar is always overwhelming force, and you get it mostly by reputation and not by seeing it.
Yeah.
But this is one of the rare examples where you really see it.
Yeah.
They're so outgunned that it's absurd. We are outgunned, outmanned,
outnumbered, outplanned. It's totally nuts. And they start hearing, you know, calls from outside to like come out and start the parlay. And the, you know, Kevan is there to say, like, you know, like, they brought everyone because they're here to kill you. Like, this is not.
Kevan is really the Newt of this episode, I think.
Right, yeah.
It won't make any difference.
The family goes out to negotiate.
I guess that makes all this worthwhile.
Don't you start with me, Quark.
And they walk right out into the kill zone.
Right. And who do they meet but another Vorta, played by Iggy Pop.
Did you clock him right away just by voice? I sure did.
I saw his name come up in the opening credits. And I, at this point, like, you know, most of the episode has gone by. Like, he is not revealed till like about the 30-minute mark in the episode. And I was like, where is this Iggy Pop character going to be? And boy, he has a great face for Vorta makeup, because the like side lobes coming down on the ears really make him look alien.
Yeah. Hey, Yelgren, why the long face? He's got a great face for Vorta. You're right. And a great voice for it, too. I feel like most other Vortas we've met have a higher pitched or Adam Pranica style voice.
Yeah. And they're
and Yelgren's got a deeper voice.
I'm glad I was here to witness it.
Yelgren is a real no nonsense, no bullshit type Vorta. Like,
right.
He does not have time for this stupid negotiation. He is not interested in negotiating, really. He has to. So
yeah.
The interactions are very like to the point and businesslike. And what Quark arranges here is, all right, like, here's how it's going to work. Like, you're going to send all of these Jem'Hadar back to your ship. Your ship is going to start traveling toward Dominion space at all deliberate speed. And then in like 30 minutes, we're going to do this prisoner exchange, and it's just going to be you and us. And maybe you can keep two of your Jem'Hadar maximum.
For some reason, this is a thing that Yelgren agrees to.
I mean, I still feel like two Jem'Hadar is more than enough to take on these Ferengi, right?
Yeah, what's the Ferengi Jem'Hadar exchange rate, you think?
I think it's 10 to 1. I think it's an easy 10 to 1.
I think at an airport, that's more like 7 to 1. Because they really get you at the airport.
Yeah, sure. Right. They take a big cut off the top.
Right.
But if you can wait and do it with your bank, 10 to 1.
Sure. Speaking of cuts off the top, I feel like Yelgren is really rocking an extremely high top fade.
Yeah, you don't get to see like a lot of Vorta together that often.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's fun to cut back and forth between him and Kivan.
Yeah. I like that a lot.
They also have to establish something important in this scene, which is whether or not Moogie is a gold.
Right, and you just have to stab her to find out.
Yeah.
It's
that falls to the grandson.
Yeah, it's Nog that does it.
Yeah. Something that has always driven me nuts about movies and television is that whenever somebody needs to get some blood from someone, they do the knife across the palm. Like, I can't think of a worse place to have a knife wound than your palm.
It's also the most painful place to be sliced, right?
It's the most painful place. It's the most debilitating place. And it's going to take the longest to heal because that skin moves the most.
Are we assuming dermal regeneration is going to happen, and that's why it's a consequence-free slice across the hand?
Oh, yeah. I guess in Star Trek, it's less consequential. Shit, I didn't even think about dermal regeneration. They get back to Six Bay, and everybody is super impressed with Quark because he basically told the Dominion how it's going to be, and the Dominion agreed to it. Like, he looks very badass to all of them in this moment.
He does. I mean, it's that danger, though, of celebrating too soon, right?
Right. Well, it's that combined with Rom can't be excited and not let some key information slip.
Right.
Because they're all geeking out about this, and Rom is like, this is going to be great. I can't wait to whack up that 50 bars of latinum.
50 bars? You said the reward was 20.
And this is an argument that turns hot enough that a rifle goes off, and all of the Ferengi manage to duck, but Kivan gets the rifle blast right to the chest. It's a smoking pit, and he face plants on the floor of this six bay.
I love it. RSVP, Kivan.
His last words were, I hate Ferengi. And I feel like Kivan kind of says what we were all thinking in this episode.
Yeah. We have become Kivan in that moment. We am become Kivan.
Yeah.
This is bad. This is really bad because the thing that Quark negotiated is now in danger of being blown up because they have no thing to exchange for Moogie.
It's a fucking crisis. And, you know, there's a ticking clock here too, right? Because they had a 30-minute timer that they set with the Vorta outside. And now they've got a dead key van.
We got a dead key van here.
Nobody cares. But you know, a couple of Jem'Hadar who are going to be none too pleased about this bullshit. So
the exchange rate on a dead key van is even worse than an airport key van exchange rate. Right.
What is it's like half of a dead key van equals 10 Ferengi equal 1 Jem'Hadar.
Right.
Oh, wait. No, that doesn't work. Because that would mean that Jem'Hadar is less valuable than a key van.
Aren't they, though?
I think it's 100 dead key vans to 10 Ferengis to 1 Jem'Hadar.
Wow. You really think the Jem'Hadar are worthless?
No, the Jem'Hadar are worth the most.
Really? I don't get this math that you're doing.
You're so high right now, man.
I mean, I always do the money exchanger at the airport. That's my problem.
Yeah.
Very bad in international travel.
That's a sucker's deal.
Yeah.
My wife would dry heave if she saw you do that.
I choose convenience over value. Yeah. It's bad. So Kivan has fallen in a room chock full of medical equipment, and it makes you think that his wounds may be survivable.
They start putting those little stick-on computer deals on his forehead and stuff.
You think you're going to get a bit of a clip show here.
Yeah. The portable clip show device. But these are just little neural stimulators. And when Nog puts one on him, Kivan's arm reaches up and smacks Nog across the forehead.
Okay, that's just about the most awful thing I've ever seen.
Ferengi think that the day is saved, but Nog explains, no, that was just like an autonomic reaction. But I think we could use this to our advantage. So they find the crate of neural stimulators and stick them all over this dude.
Has anyone here seen Weekend at Bernie's?
I think I've got an idea.
Just going to have to trust me. This Weekend at Kevin's plan just might work.
They need a little time, though, so Quark has to run out into the hallway and stall with Yelgren, but he says he wants to change the spot for the exchange to over by the airlock where their ship is docked. Yelgren's a little bit cheesed about this, but understands why Quark wants to make a hasty getaway once he's got his Moogie back. So they agree. They're gonna go meet up in this hallway, and we get this scene, right, where it's Yelgren and a couple of Jem'Hadars and Moogie down at one end of the hallway, and Quark and Zombie Kivan down at the other end of the hallway, and they like count down, and then you know the prisoner exchange starts, and Moogie starts walking toward Quark, and then over in the side of the other hallway, Nog is sort of trying to play quap with Kivan and make him walk toward Yelgren.
I love that the controllability of radio-controlled Kivan has all of the accuracy of like the old Radio Shack RC cars that you used to get when we were little, like the worst RC cars. Yeah. Like you'd put in a control input and then the truck would turn 5 seconds later and then go into a curb.
Yeah.
Really bad.
It's hard, man.
Yeah.
So Kivan makes it like 3/4 of the way there before he kind of veers into a wall. This distraction is enough for Lek and company to throw open a door and take out the Jem'Hadar. One of them goes down with a knife, and I think the other one gets shot. Yelgren ducks and does not get killed, but all the threats are off the board. So this is victory, Ferengi.
Do we get to celebrate this time again? Guess so. There's a lot of celebration in this episode.
There is. I mean, they're happy to have Moogie back. They decide to give Yelgrin to the Federation as a thank you for giving them Kivan.
Yeah.
And it's kind of a big gift, right? Because Yelgrin's going to have more up-to-date information to be debriefed of than Kivan did.
I hope we cut back to Kivan every once in a while in the episodes ahead.
Just bonking against the wall.
Yeah, I want to know how long those batteries last.
Yeah. What would go first, the batteries or his, like, or would he just like start rotting?
Yeah, I wonder if it's a like a water torture thing where even if you hit your head against a bulkhead very lightly, if in totality after hitting it there
right.
20,000 times, eventually you just bash your brains in.
Yeah, well, I hope they keep doing that cut so that we can find out.
So Quark gets to experience the heroism that he was kept from in that first scene. He gets to know what it's like.
Yeah.
He doesn't know what it's like. He has to ask his brother. His brother says it feels pretty good. And Quark agrees.
Feels good.
Yeah.
You think Yelgrin kills himself the way Kivan was supposed to?
I mean, that's the promise, right?
Yeah.
That's what we've been told.
Yelgrin's not going to make it that far.
I want more Yelgrin.
I know. Yelgrin was such a great character. Like, I feel like...
Are we going to get a Weyoun Yelgrin conversation?
Yeah, or like a makeout scene or something.
I want that.
You really want to do this? Here, now, okay, let's do it!
Did you like the episode?
I like Yelgrin. Yeah, I think I like the episode, though. I mean, this episode tells you very early on, do not take this seriously.
Yeah. This is going to be one of the silly ones.
And I took that message to heart, and I think that made the episode quite enjoyable.
I have to say, like, the previous episode, Statistical Probabilities, was also a episode with largely silly characters that I think also signaled not to take it super seriously ahead of time. But I think I like this episode a lot more than that one.
Yeah.
Because it just felt... I don't know. It was a more interesting story.
I mean, unlike our hit show Friendly Fire, I think we can credibly compare episodes of Deep Space Nine, especially within the same season. I like the thing that made me a little sad about Statistical Probability is that was like a Bashir centerpiece episode, and we rarely ever get those. I feel like we get a lot of Quark centerpiece episodes like this. Yeah. And I think for the most part, they're better.
Yeah. Do you think that they're keeping track of that as actors? Like, they've got to be, right?
Yeah, it makes me think that like, a lot like SNL, where I wonder if the actors are sort of pitching the writers in, like, you gotta give me an episode, guys. It's been a while since we've had a Bashir ep. Why don't you cook something up? Like, is there that kind of jockeying for time?
There's got to be.
Yeah.
Right? Like, if you're Alexander Siddig and you're looking like, wow, there's been like 10 episodes this season and I've only gotten one that's kind of centered on my character, that's not good.
Yeah, it's got to feel bad to week in and week out get in the chair, get the makeup, get the costuming, and then do your six lines and be done with it. You got to really kind of ache for your A story if you don't get it.
One thing I noticed about these two episodes, episodes 9 and 10, was that I think 9 was the last episode before Thanksgiving in 1997, and 10 was the first episode after Christmas. And it's interesting to think about those being kind of comparatively light stories around holiday time. Like, this was like a very dark opening to the season, and then they seem to have pulled up out of the abyss for... the time of year the episodes would be coming out.
I think that's a great point, and it's something I never really look at. Like, all this information's available to us. Like, we know release dates, but I never consider their placement within the calendar year with any significance. But I think you're right. Like, why not sprinkle the lighter ones at times in the year where, you know, you'd be with friends and family or people that are not usually exposed to Star Trek, right?
Like, yeah.
I think these are broader themes and situations where you don't really need the entire backstory of these characters to appreciate what's happening.
Right. And your mother-in-law is there like, why is that guy's ears so big? What's his deal?
What now what's a Vardo again?
Is he going to take his shirt off and sing some songs at some point, or?
Now these guys are Farningis, right?
Well, do you want to see if we have any Priority One messages in the inbox, Adam?
Sure do.
Priority One message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone, could be enough to buy this ship.
Okay, Adam, couple of Priority One messages here. This is the first. It's from Joel in Bristol, UK. And it's to us, Ben and Adam. Goes like this. Well, I just finished viewing the Greatest Gen TNG episodes and decided it was finally time to stop denying these hardworking boys their scarves. I haven't started Voyager yet, but I hope the scarves bit has stuck. If you want to come to the UK, I will set you up with podcast fluid. Love, ya boy, Joel.
Hey, thanks, wow. Joel.
Thank you, Joel. I would love some British podcast fluid. They got good podcast fluid over there.
They really do. It tastes different over there from what I hear.
You know what? You know what American podcast fluid has in common with having sex in a canoe, Adam? It's fucking close to water.
Delightful. Our second Priority One message is to David the Classicist, and it is from not your wife this time.
Oh boy.
Oh no. I don't want to be a part of this.
Yeah, it seems dangerous.
Maybe the message will help us understand. It goes like this. I've finally watched all episodes everywhere. From discussing Trek with you as kids back home, to sipping whiskey at your house, to chatting our way through a pandemic, I hope Star Trek and you are both parts of my life forever. P.S. I swear I'll read your dissertation soon. Thank you. Thank you so much for telling me about TGG.
Oh, I see. So the "your" is not us, it's somebody else.
Right. That was a misplaced "your," is what that was. But still,
I didn't know which wife we were talking about, Adam. I was very worried.
That's where my mind went to, and then I thought, well, like, if this isn't my wife and it's not David's wife, then who is this?
Are there other wives in the world? Anyways, it's a very sweet message. If you would like to send a Priority One message to somebody, we'd really appreciate it. It helps us keep the lights on around here. You head to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron to do it. Do it now!
Gotta get that gold press light. Get that gold press light.
Am I right? Am I right?
Moms. Can't live with them. Can't find a great gift for them. It's madness. And it's the same every year. Mother's Day comes around and it's like, what's it gonna be this year? Another robe? Another candle? Slippers? A sweater? Flowers? We've got to do better than that, right? Well, you can. And it's actually the best gift you could possibly give a loved one. An Aura frame. Now, we have a policy to only do ads on our show for things that we actually like and use. And I gotta tell you, the Aura frame is probably the best gift I've ever given. Folks I've given an Aura frame to love it, and I love it too, because when you give an Aura frame, you're not just giving a person a bunch of old pictures, you're giving them new pictures every time you send one to it. Right now, Aura has a great sale for Mother's Day. Viewers can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com, and the code is SCARVES at checkout to show your support for the show. Terms and conditions apply.
Mother's Day is coming up, and one of the best gifts you can give a mom that you might share a bed with is doing some yard work downstairs, if you know what I mean.
with Manscaped. This season, make sure you groom your carpets and your drapes with the leaders in below-the-waist grooming. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVS at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVS at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants to let the mother of your children know how much you appreciate her continuing to put up with you.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of Triple Click.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to, oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
Hey Adam,
it's that Ben.
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Incredible, drunk Shimoda.
God, the obvious choice is Yelgrin, but I'm gonna go with Rom. The way Rom introduces himself and everyone else to Kevin aboard the ship is just so sweet. It's sweet in a way that he's really up in his own head about being hospitable and kind in a way that. He's not really thinking about it. He's not thinking about his situation in a way that's very Shimoda-esque.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna give it to Rom this time. I'm gonna avoid the obvious. What about you?
I'm gonna give it to Lek. Just every time he was on screen, I thought about that guy in Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels that says, "Guns for show, knives for a pro."
Yeah.
I liked his knife combat. Pedigree. So Lek is my drunk Shibota for this episode.
I like that impression.
On the next episode, season 6, episode 11, Waltz, we will be watching an episode with the following description. After their ship is destroyed, Sisko is stranded on a distant planet with an increasingly disturbed Dukat. Dukat.
He's back.
And I'm going to head over to gach.biz/game, where we keep the game of buttholes, the will of the prophets, and roll the dice on the next episode. Of course, we are currently on square 42, the answer to life, the universe, and everything. A little bit ahead, we've got that Coco No-No episode. And I think that's the only thing we could hit, conceivably.
You're required to learn as you play. Roll.
So I'm going to go ahead and roll it.
Roll it.
Chula!
Did I win?
Hardly.
I've rolled a 5, which puts us on square 47. We jumped right over that Coco No-No. So no drunk-isode for these people. No drunk-isode for us either.
Nope. Just bags and cans for you and me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that sounds pretty suggestive. Putting it that way.
Yeah. But I'm looking forward to it. Sounds like a fun episode. You want to take this puppy home?
Gotta do it, Ben. Of course, this show can't go anywhere without the support we get at MaximumFun.org/join. Your support keeps us going, keeps the lights on, keeps us fed and drank. MaximumFun.org/join is where your monthly support makes The Greatest Generation possible, and we thank you.
We do indeed. We also thank Adam Ragusea, who made the theme music for this show based on the original work of Dark Materia. We thank Bill Tilley, who makes trading cards based on every episode. He puts those up on Twitter using the hashtag GreatestGen. His Twitter handle is BillTilley1973. Mine is BenjaminAHR, and Adam's is @CutForTime.
Yeah, social media is the place where you can connect with other friends at DeSoto. Maybe join a group.
That would be great.
Maybe talk about the show or not talk about the show. There are many groups that don't even talk about the show. They're talking about cooking and
working out,
knitting, and all sorts of things.
These are great groups. You're going to love them. Go to maxfunstore.com and get some Greatest Gen merch. We got all kinds of t-shirts and things up there.
Yeah, show us your quarantine pic wearing a... wearing an unwashed t-shirt that you got from the Max Fun Store. And with that, we'll be back at you next time with another great episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine and an episode of The Greatest Generation Deep Space Nine, which is it's a little like the Mark Morrison song, right? Return of Ducat.
You lied to me, even though you know I see four lights. You lied to me. You say five, you say five.
Return of Ducat, don't you know? Return of Ducat. Return of Ducat. Oh my God, you know that I'm Ducat.
Here I am.
Mark Morrison. Not to be confused with Mark Alamo. Plays Gul Ducat.
Well, that'll be next week.
This is, we're really holding the show hostage here at the end.
Yeah, yeah. The show is Moogie, and we are all the Jem'Hadar.
We're whoever the Ferengi was that shot Moogie in the simulation.
I'm pretty sure that was Lek. That was funny.
Yeah.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture. Artist owned.
Audience supported.